easily that is in the spiritual life as well. To leave the mountaintop and how quickly you go down into the valley. You don't have to traverse very far. You don't have to travel or make much of an effort to get from the tops of the mountain peaks spiritually to be brought right down into the valley. We can be enjoying those blessings that are in high. And yet within a matter of moments even, we can be wading through the depths of the valley. Now, as I've mentioned, we've considered this event before with the 12 spies. We've looked at this passage in detail before with how the 12 spies, they missed out on God's best. We've looked at this passage as well in relation to Caleb's life prayer and how Mount Hebron had such an impact upon him that even after 45 years, it was still the prayer of his heart. It was still the prayer upon his lips and upon his mouth. Give me this mountain. So this evening, I don't need to rehearse or revisit all that we've said in the past. But rather, I want to emphasize, I want to leave you with the reason why the spies moved from the top of the mountain down into the valley in such a quick period of time. The answer was fear. Yes, the mountain of Hebron was special. And they could see for miles all around them as they were upon the mountaintop. The entire valleys, the entire countryside just lay before them. And everything upon that mountain was good. Everything upon that mountain was blessed apart from one thing. There were giants. The children of Anak. And so those spies, apart from Caleb and Joshua, those spies gave up ever enjoying the mountaintop. Ever enjoying all of the blessings of being there. And their desire, even as they stood upon the mountaintop, was get me down. Get me back out of this mountain. It doesn't matter that this is a blessed place. It doesn't matter that this is a secure place. It doesn't matter that all of the blessings are upon this mountain. Get me down. They looked upon the giants. They saw themselves in light of the giants. They saw themselves as grasshoppers and they couldn't wait to get out of that mountain. Because of the fear that gripped them, they were not only willing to give up the mountaintop, they were willing to never go back to it. They were quite happy to be in the valley. They'd rather endure a valley than experience a mountaintop. I'd rather endure a valley than contend and fight to have that mountaintop experience, that mountaintop blessing. Many Christians there are today that are missing out because of fear. Many Christians there are today that find themselves in deep, dark valleys because they are afraid. How many are willing to give up the ground, the gains, out of fear of the enemy? Once they were strong, once they battled, once they pressed forward, once they enjoyed blessings, they moved step by step in the right direction, pushing and pushing against the enemy, pushing them back, prevailing against them. And then they come to a certain obstacle, they come to a certain giant, and it's just fear stops them. And they start to retreat. Once those that were full of courage now are full of cowardice. Now I feel it's a very sad testimony of a believer. Once they stood strong, they stood resolute, once they were willing to stand against anything. Once they were willing to take their stand against anyone, but over time, now they were but a shadow of their former self. Afraid of man, afraid of the world. Afraid of this, afraid of that, afraid of anything, afraid of everything. You realize, child of God, there's only one that we should ever fear in this world. That's the Lord. We should never fear any individual. We should never fear any group, any leader, any nation. We should never fear any disease. We should never fear any problem that may come our way. We should never fear anything except the Lord. William Gurnall, he said, we fear men so much because we fear God so little. one a Christian should ever fear is the Lord. Of course, when we speak of fear in relation to God, it's not a concern of being in danger. We don't fear the Lord because we were scared of what he might do to us, or we're concerned that we might be in danger at the hand of the Lord. But rather, fearing the Lord is a reverential fear or awe of who God is. It's that understanding we are before a great God. You see that even as you study through the book of Proverbs. It's an interesting word study. I encourage you to do it in your own time. You just go to the book of Proverbs and you stick with the word fear. You look at how often and how the word fear is applied even in the book of Proverbs. And it's very interesting because whenever it's speaking of the fear of the Lord, it's never negative. I'll leave you with three of them. I don't want to give you them all. What's the point in you going home to do a Bible study on it? Proverbs 9 to verse 10, it says, "The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. The knowledge of the holy is understanding." Proverbs 14 to verse 27, "The fear of the Lord is a fountain of life to depart from the snares of death." Proverbs 19 to verse 23, "The fear of the Lord tendeth to life, and he that hath it shall abide satisfied, and he shall not be visited with evil." Every single time it's mentioning the fear of the Lord, it's all positive. It's the beginning of wisdom. It's a fountain of life. It's tending on to life. All of the aspects, all of the positivity, all of the important aspects of life, wisdom, life itself, are all found at the basis, the foundation, the fear of God. Well, child of God, let me encourage you, never fear the world or anyone in it. Rather look to the Lord and fear him. Because even as Psalm 34 in the verse 4 reminds us, he can deliver us from all fears. You think how many different aspects, how many different phobias even, and all of the different names that are attached to each phobia, and all of the different concerns that individuals have within life, and yet every single fear that we have, God can deliver us from them all. Oh, how sad it must have been and disheartening for Joshua and Caleb as they stood upon Mount Hebron with their 12 fellow Israelites, their 10 fellow spies. Remember, these 10 other spies, these were faithful men. The other 10 individuals that went with Joshua and Caleb, they were the best of the best. They were the trophy, they were the cream of the crop in each of their individual tribes. They were the very greatest of the soldiers. They were the very greatest of the Israelite men within each individual tribe. They had proved themselves. They had shown themselves worthy. They had shown themselves as being individuals who could be depended upon and trusted upon. And yet when they went into that land to spy it out, they came to Hebron. They looked upon the children of Anak, those great giants of men that they were, and fear gripped them to the point they said, "We need to get down." Strong, courageous men, and yet look what they became. And they returned to Moses and they returned to the rest of the Israelites. It was just fear gripping them and fear pouring out of their mouth with their speech. Oh, how important it is to be reminded, even if our motto text for this year, to have it ever before us, Joshua 1 and 9, "Be strong and of a good courage, be not afraid. Neither be thou dismayed, for the Lord thy God is with thee whithersoever thou goest." Whatever comes this year, wherever you have to go, whatever you have to contend with, whatever comes upon your plate, God says, do not be afraid. He's with you. The place of Eshcol. But then secondly, I want you to see the verse 23 of chapter 13. The provision of Eshcol. The provision of Eshcol. It tells us they came onto the brook of Eshcol and they cut down from thence a branch with one cluster of grapes. And they bare it between two upon a staff, and they brought of the pomegranates and of the figs. And they come down from the mountaintop into the valley. And it's there that they discover this great cluster of grapes. You think to yourself of the fear that's upon their minds, upon their hearts. The speed that they would have come down that mountainside. And they come down into that valley. And all that's upon their minds, all that's even before them as it were in their eyes, all they keep seeing and rehearsing over and over again is, did you see the size of those giants? And yet in the providence of God, they come into that valley and they're hanging upon a tree. Something they've never seen before. It's also something that can't be ignored. Such is the vastness, such is the magnitude of that great tree and of that great cluster of grapes. It's not something that they could simply pass by. This was a great cluster of grapes like no other. This was a cluster of grapes that was so big, even as it tells us in that verse, it had to be carried between two. Such is the magnitude of it, they placed it upon that staff, and they had to carry it one behind and one in front, and the cluster of grapes in the middle of the two of them. It was a cluster of grapes that went with them for the remainder of their 40 days of reconnaissance. Everywhere they went, that cluster of grapes went with them. Everything else that they seen in that rest of that journey, the cluster of grapes was right there with them. Every morning that they got up and every night that they lay down in that ground, the cluster of grapes was beside them. It was a constant reminder of the promise of a land flowing with milk and honey. Surely it ought to have been a constant encouragement to them of what the provision of God for them would be. That was a great promise. That was a great foundation even for them, for Abraham, for Isaac, for Jacob. I'm giving you a land that floweth with milk and honey. That was a great rehearsal even upon the ears of the individuals, from Moses, from Aaron, even as they came through the wilderness, as they came to the land of Canaan. We're going to a land that floweth with milk and honey. These 12 spies, every single day of their reconnaissance, they're carrying with them an absolute perfect example of just what God's provision looked like. Just what God could provide and would provide for them once they conquered the land, once they entered into their inheritance. Surely that would keep their minds away from doubt. Surely such a provision would keep their minds away from the fears. Surely their attention would be upon the wonderful provision from God. What a type, what a picture this cluster of grapes is of the Lord Jesus Christ. Christ, of course, is the one who names himself in John 15 in the verse 1 as the true vine. And using that metaphor, using that example, we can see just how blessed the Son of God is, and even both to God and to man. Judges 9, verse 13, it says there, the vine said unto them, should I leave my wine, which cheereth God and man? And you think of the Lord Jesus Christ as a great vine. He cheereth, he brings blessing, he brings honor, glory to his Father, because his Father says, this is my beloved Son in whom I am well pleased. He brings encouragement, blessing even. He cheers the heart of man. Why? Because he lives within us. He lives for us. He has saved us. He has washed us. And he now prays for us. He cheers us up, as it were. He cheers the heart within us. Christ is the true vine. He's not a wild vine which brought deception, as speaks about in 2 Kings 4:39. But rather he is the true vine which enriches, which blesses all that come to him. He is the picture that's described by Judah's vine which enriched him with the blood of the grape, Genesis 49:11. He's the picture described by Joseph's vine in Genesis 49:22. Those branches it speaks of that run over the wall, that all brings us to Christ. He's a picture as well of Israel's vine in 1 Kings 4:25. Under which it tells us in that verse, Judah and Israel dwelt safely all the days of Solomon. Christ is the true vine. What a blessing to know that when we're in the valley that we find Christ is there for us. You think of that time, those 12 spies, they came down into the valley and there was the vine waiting for them. There was that great cluster of grapes hanging upon that tree, hanging from that branch. There for them all to see was that great vine, that great spectacle, that great wonder. Oh, what a blessing it is, even for the child of God, when we're in the valley, to look upon the one who hangs upon the tree for us. Look upon the one who hung upon that cruel, rugged cross. What a privilege, what a blessing it is to even take him with us wherever we journey. To have Christ in the midst, to ever look upon him, to ever feed upon him, to ever have Christ in the midst with us. You think of that. There was those 12 spies and there was those individuals and they're carrying that great cluster with them. Everywhere they went, they could look upon it. My, they could even taste the grapes for themselves to see how sweet and how juicy, how refreshing and nourishing they were. It's not the reality for the Christian with Christ. Have him with us wherever we go, to even taste and to see that the Lord is good, to have that nourishing even from the shepherd himself. My friend, there's no greater provision for the child of God than Jesus Christ, the true vine. There's no greater individual to remove our fear and our doubts. There's no one greater even to carry with us than Christ himself. Place of Eshcol, the provision of Eshcol. But then over in chapter 32 in the verse 9, I want you to see the penalty of Eshcol. The penalty of Eshcol. Moses there, he says, he's speaking to these representatives of Reuben and of Gad and of the half-tribe Manasseh. He speaks there in the verse 9, he says, "For when they went up onto the valley of Eshcol, and saw the land, they discouraged the heart of the children of Israel." Now you think of this passage, Numbers 32. This is 40 years later. 40 years have passed since those 12 spies returned. 40 years have passed since those 10 spies declared of how we're grasshoppers, of how we're basically fainting in their sight, of how there's no hope. Even though the blessing was there, even though the provision was there. May you think of it, 40 years have passed, all of those 10 spies have passed away. All of the individuals from the Israelite people that were 20 years and higher have all passed away. The only ones that are still alive, Moses, Joshua, Caleb, a new generation has rose up. And yet even 40 years later, the new generation that there is, the valley of Eshcol still carries one meaning and one memory. Fear. Doubt. Defeat. That's all it's remembered for. It's not remembered, oh, the valley of Eshcol is that wonderful place where the great cluster of grapes was found. That great wonder of provision. We don't remember it for that. No, we remember it. Why? Because of the fear and the doubt. Oh, what a truly sad day. What a grievous one in the history of Israel. As those spies had returned. Even though they'd been in the valley, even though they'd received of the provision that was there, even though they knew how great that provision was, even though they knew how good it was, and yet they'd remained in their crippling fear instead. Forever, the Valley of Eshcol is associated with discouraging people and fear winning the day. And so when these 2.5 tribes speak of staying in the far side of Jordan, setting up home there, Moses immediately points the finger to Eshcol. Immediately he reminds them, do you remember, let me remind you what happened in Eshcol. And he asks that question, are you going to do what they did? Are you going to live in fear? Are you not coming across the River Jordan because of fear like those 10 spies? Remember Eshcol. Such a dark mark and blot upon the history of the people. So much provision, so great a provision, and yet they give in to fear. Sadly, as I said before, they're Christians. They have the experience of Christ, the experience of the new birth, the experience of that true vine in their lives. They even carry him with them, and yet they are given in to fear. Giants of doubt and despair take over. Instead of holding on to the promises of God, instead of believing in them, they miss out. And they're rendered immobile. We've just finished in the youth fellowship that particular section in Pilgrim's Progress where pilgrim and faithful end up in Doubting Castle. If you ever read Pilgrim's Progress, they go to Doubting Castle. There's the giant despair. They're imprisoned for a period of time. I noted, I mentioned to the young people, Doubting Castle, it's the only place within that particular book up to that very point that's ever referred to as a castle. There's Palace Beautiful, that's the house, the Church of God. There's the different houses. But Doubting's a castle, it's not a house. Within Doubting Castle, they're beaten up. They're left for day after day, night after night in despair. Until it comes to one moment, they begin to pray. Christian remembers, I have a key. And his key opens up every door, every lock, every gate, every exit out of that castle, and they flee from it. They go up onto the mountaintop and there are shepherds upon that mountaintop and the shepherds give them a warning. They don't know where they've just come from. Christian and faithful, don't tell them we've been in Doubting Castle. The shepherds, as they're leaving the top of the mountain, the shepherds warn them about different things. One of the things they warn them about is be careful of Doubting Castle. There's many Christians have ended up there and have never got out. It's a reality today. There are Christians chained within Doubting Castle, full of fear and despair. They never get out. They never get away from it. Oswald Chambers, he said, the remarkable thing about fearing God is that when you fear God, you fear nothing else. Child of God, tonight, remember Eshcol. When you think of Eshcol, don't remember it for fear and doubt. Don't fill your mind with the fear and doubt that those 10 spies had. But rather, whenever you think of Eshcol, you think of Christ. He's the great vine, the true vine. It's a great provision that God the Father has given to us. given for us. And so in those times, whenever great giants, great obstacles may come against us, we start to become afraid, the heart starts to flutter. Be strong and of a good courage. Be not dismayed. For I, the Lord thy God, will go with thee whithersoever thou goest. Remember Christ, the great, the true vine. Always fix your eyes upon him. May the Lord bless his word to our hearts this evening.